everyone, and welcome to episode number 146 of Book Hype. Today we're going to be talking about Cereal Box in the Book Burner series, and we've got Julian Yap here, who is a co-founder of Cereal Box, to kind of give us an overview of what this is like and what we can expect from book burners. So as usual, if you guys want to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at BookHype. You can visit us on Facebook.com/HypeableBooks or on Goodreads at HypeableBooks. And I just want to say good morning to my usual co-host, Kristen.
Good morning.
And hello to Julian. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So we usually start off with talking about what we've been reading lately. And as we were just discussing, Kristen, once again, having a handful of books, I'm going to make you go first.
Okay. This is not abnormal. I give you my list because I'm lucky and yeah. Okay. So the first one that I want to talk about is The Simplicity of Cider by Amy E. Reichert. I started it yesterday at work, and it was a lot more like emotionally damaging than I thought it was going to be, but cause I really like, it's about a family that owns an orchard, and like, I knew that it was, you know, I've read a lot of books like that have that setting. And so I was expecting this charming and sweet little fun story. No, there's a lot
like
of like
Comfort Farm or something like that.
Right, yeah, and it was a lot more emotional. There's a lot more baggage going on than I thought, but it was a really good story, and I actually finished it before I went to bed last night. I couldn't leave it. Like, I needed to know how it ended, and yeah, it definitely reeled me in. I'll be reading her other two that are out right now soon, so I'll report back on those too. But yeah, definitely liked Simplicity of Cider, so make sure to check that out if you're looking to be emotionally damaged.
Is anyone ever looking to be emotionally damaged by a book? I think it just happens.
I mean, sometimes you just really want a good cry, and that book will definitely help you get there. That's for sure. Yeah. I also read both Flow and Grip by Kennedy Ryan. Which, to be completely honest, like, I hadn't heard of her until about March, when she had gotten in touch with me and said that Grip had come out like 3 weeks before. And for Hypeable, we tend to try to stick to like release day for reviews. Like, we try to keep up with that. So we don't typically look backward too much. We try and keep looking forward. So I had told her, like, go ahead and send me the book, and I'll try and do like a different kind of article, not a review, but like, I wanted to talk about these books because the main characters are an interracial couple, and she also deals with the topic of race. And in the book, the main character, Grip, it's his nickname, he loses a cousin to police violence, but the police officer that committed the violence was also a cousin of his. So like, the story is so personal, and it's a really important story. But I really, really, really loved Flow and Grip. The main character, Grip, is actually a rapper, and the heroine, Bristol, is a good friend of his, a sister to his best friend, and they have their own family drama going on. And yeah, just watching them like navigate the current landscape, it was really interesting. And just, it's a really important story. And I know she's got a third part to this coming out, I think it's next week, called Still. And I'm hoping to get my hands on that, because I really, really, really want to write something about this series, because it's so well done and so well handled. And I'm definitely interested. Like, the whole thing just kind of blew me away. So definitely keep an eye out for Kennedy Ryan, because she's great.
And relevant.
Yeah, it's sounds so very beyond relevant. It's beyond relevant. And she actually wrote some of his rap into the story. Like,
oh, cool.
Rather than it just being like, oh, he is a rapper and we kind of stand back from it. No, she actually wrote the song because there's like a song that he writes about the current landscape that is so poignant, like so interesting and relevant, as you said, like, and she wrote the rap itself and it's really well done. And I was like, wow, like this is, it's really cool. So yeah, definitely kind of fell for those. So it's something to keep an eye on. And last but never least, I read Play On by Samantha Young, and my review is posted on Hypebol. So if you want to check that out, feel free. It's a return to everything that Samantha Young does spectacularly. Her first series was about an American who was living in Scotland and like how they met the love of their life and all of that. And it kind of spiraled from there, and their entire friend group had their own books and all of that. It was a really great series. I love the On Dublin Street series, but Play On is a new series kind of set in the same way. It's an American who makes her way to Scotland. It's an adorable story about how she gets there, but it kind of ends sadly. This is another book that kind of emotionally damaged me. So I guess it's just the theme of the week. But yeah, Play On is really, really great. She nails like emotional backstories. Like, she is my queen. Every time I need like a good cry, or I need a book that just isn't just superficial fun, because sometimes you just need a book to be fun. But when you're like really interested in getting to the heart of a character and you really just want to be affected by a character, Samantha Young is like by far, she's so great at it. Play On was a very good start to a new series, and I can't wait to see who she has books for next and what comes next, because yeah, there's a lot of things. The book gives you a satisfying ending, but there's a lot of things kind of left that I'm sure she's going to touch on in other stories that I can't wait to read. So yeah, it was a good reading week. Lots of emotional baggage, but it was a good reading.
Apparently. Sometimes you just need it.
Yeah.
What about you, Julian? You said you've been rereading some favorites lately.
Yeah. I made the mistake, and I mean, I guess it's not really a mistake, but of picking up an old favorite of mine a few weeks ago. It's the book, A Post Captain by Patrick O'Brien, and it's the books that the Masked and Commander movie were based off of. It's the Aubrey Maturin series, and this is a series. I mean, I think he was writing these books like less than 50 years ago at this point. But it's a series of books about a Napoleonic War naval commander and his whose name is Jack Aubrey, and his best friend Stephen Maturin, who is a naval surgeon and spy, and they sort of go around the world having these great adventures aboard ship. And one of the things I love about it, though, is that, you know, so it sounds a lot like one of these, you know, Horatio Hornblower style books. But what I think is sort of brilliant about it is Post Captain, which is actually the second book in the series. I don't like the first book in the series, but Post Captain is one of those. It's at least half of the book happens on land, and this huge sections, which really, you know, they sort of remind me of Jane Austen in that, you know, there's large sections about you know, making a good marriage and who will marry who, and some fascinating, they're all filled with amazing detail, not just about shipboard life, but also just life in the 18th century. Possibly the 19th century, life in the 19th century. There's a fascinating section on how law enforcement for debts worked, and that, you know, Jack Aubrey owes, there's this whole section about, you know, where these bailiffs, who are actually just private citizens, who are hired to bring him in, can actually arrest him, and where they can't, and it's really, they're really great. And every time I start reading them, any of them, like I started with Post Captain, I only meant to read that. I just can't stop reading the book. So I finished book three yesterday night. I'm gonna crack open book four today. They're super readable. They're really funny. The action is great. It's they're a little. It's actually funny. It's hard to say whether or not they're dated because they're so steeped in the language of the day. So I feel like if you read too many of them, you start talking like someone in the early 19th century, which is not necessarily the best way to spend your days. But it's an amazing series. And then other than that, I've also been reading a book called, it's actually a choose your own adventure book by Ryan North called Romeo and or Juliet. And it's a lot of fun. Ryan North is the writer behind the dinosaur comics. If you've ever heard of those, it's an online comic strip. And this book, basically you get to, it's like those choose your own adventure books you used to play as a kid. And you get to either be Romeo or Juliet, and you can make the same choices they did, or you can, you know, go off on completely different tracks. And, you know, a bunch of characters from the other Shakespeare plays make cameos. So, you know, as Juliet, you can end up, you know, having a fling with Hotspur from Henry IV, Part One. And it's silly, it's fun, it's very arch. It's very light reading. It's perfect subway reading when, you know, you make a few choices and you don't miss your stop. The problem with the Aubrey Maturin books is that, you know, when I read those on the subway, I actually missed my stop the other day because I wasn't fully absorbed in this really good bit. So
that's how you know it's a good book.
Stop doing that. It's true. Less good for my commute, but very good for enjoyment.
Mm-hmm. The Romeo and or Juliet sounds really interesting, actually.
So that's been fun. I definitely, you know, I can't recommend either of those books highly enough. Post Captain or Romeo and or Juliet. They're both really, you know, really solid.
Cool. Well, I read one book this week, which, as frequent listeners of Book Hype know, is quite a feat for me lately. I've been having so much trouble getting back into reading for some reason. I've been trying to read books that I've been excited about, and it's just been difficult for some reason. And I'm hoping that this book has kickstarted me getting back into that routine because it was so good. Called There's Someone Inside Your House by Stephanie Perkins. And yes, this is the same Stephanie Perkins who wrote Anna and the French Kiss, Lola and the Boy Next Door, Isla and the Happily Ever After. She's a contemporary YA romance writer, except, like, hey, she can also do horror because this book was really good. It was super creepy. It reads a lot like Scream, actually, and it reminds me a lot of MTV's television series, which I've been a fan of for the first two seasons. Season 3, since they're rebooting it, not so sure I'm going to like it, but I'll give it a shot. So it basically takes place in Nebraska. There's a killer going around who sneaks inside your house and messes with you before they kill you. And the killer kind of like rearranges your furniture or takes your shoes and puts them like across the room. And you're like, hey, I don't remember, you know, putting my phone down there. Oh, well, you know, must just not be paying attention. And then come to find out, like, you know, 10 minutes later, you're dead. And it's really horrific and gruesome. So if you like slashers, this is definitely the story for you. Didn't guess the killer, which is always a good thing. And even though it feels kind of like a normal beat-by-beat slasher kind of movie book, it was still really good. And I read the whole thing in like a day or two. Couldn't put it down. Stayed up till like 2:30 in the morning finishing it. My review is up on Hypebool, so you can check that out too. And yeah, if you like Stephanie Perkins' writing, I think, and you don't mind reading some horror, this is good. And it's kind of creepy. You get a little creeped out a couple times, but it's not as scary as like the Dawn Kurtigich book we read a couple of months ago or whenever that was. So
the one that disturbed me that I could only listen to an hour at a time at work in the full daylight. I will say I came home that night and Karen's sitting on her bed with all the lights on, like, and I was like, hi. And she's like, hi. And she's reading this book and she's like, yeah, it's a little scary. Like, she kind of like described a whole section to me and I'm like, yeah, I love Stephanie Perkins, but I don't think I'm going to be reading this one.
I can't imagine anything more terrifying than, you know, that setup. Cause now when I go home today, I'm going to be like, hey, I thought I put my shoes somewhere else. Am I just forgetful? Or because I am forgetful. Or is there a psycho killer? So thank you, guys. That's great.
You're very welcome. Don't read the book because it'll make it even worse. But actually do because it's really good. All right, let's jump into the main discussion now because I'm really excited to talk about this. As you guys know, again, if you're frequently listeners of Book Hype, episode number 144, we did an interview with a couple of the Geek Actually authors, Kathy Yardley and Cecilia Tan. We had a really good time talking about Geek Actually, and we touched a little bit on Cereal Box and how it works, but we also wanted to talk about Book Burners, which is another series from Cereal Box. And I wanted to dive a little bit deeper into what Cereal Box is because the concept of this is so interesting and so unique. And I really kind of want to shed more light on this. And Julian, considering you're one of the co-founders, I think you're a pretty good person to ask some questions to. You know, first question is, what is your role at Cereal Box?
What is my role at Cereal Box? I am one of the two co-founders of Cereal Box. I think officially I'm the COO. You know, we're a small company, so it's everyone sort of pitches in for everything. I mainly handle all of the logistical side issues. So the daily running of the business, but also making sure all of the cereals happen on time. So I do a lot of communication with the authors and the editors and the copy editors, and I keep the schedules running and you know, plan out our release dates for the year, that sort of stuff.
I imagine you answering a lot of emails in a single day.
Yeah, my job has basically become answer emails. I went on vacation for Labor Day, and I decided to have an email-less vacation. I came back, I think I had 400 in my inbox, which, you know, it's not a lot for some people. I know I have friends who work in, you know, I have a friend who works for Time Out here in New York, and think they get like 1,000 emails in a week, but it's certainly a lot.
I mean, I get like, I don't know, 50 in a day, and it's just sometimes I'm like, oh, I don't want to answer all of these, and then I put it off and then I get in trouble because it's been 3 days and people are like, can you please do this for us? So I can't imagine coming back to 400.
Yeah. Well, the one nice thing about, I was a lawyer before I found the Cereal Box, and that sort of trains you up to, you know, immediately take care of everything in your inbox. So
that's true. I need to just do it. So kind of give us the pitch for Cereal Box. How does it work? What is the concept? What's the sort of objective here? Because you guys are a very non-traditional publisher.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you get right down to it, the point of Cereal Box is this, is that these days, it's easy to feel like you don't have time to read. Mm-hmm. And we think part of that is the fact that books just have a certain amount of psychological lift. You know, they can feel daunting. And so what we wanted to do is create, if novels are the equivalent of movies, we wanted to create the equivalent of TV. So we want to take everything that's great about television and then bring that to reading. And NPR actually called us HBO for readers. And I think that that's not a bad description. So what we publish is premium, or at least I hope it's premium, fiction, which come episodic serial fiction, which comes out on a weekly basis. And it's set up like, you know, a modern day television show in that you can enjoy each episode on its own. You know, each one is a complete narrative unit. But if you read them all, you get this, you know, the bigger plot, and there's this overarching plot which continues through the whole series. And so it lets you know that what you're getting is this, you know, 30 to 40 minute reading experience once a week. And, you know, it takes about an hour to listen to. As we have, you know, an audio version for all of our episodes, because we wanted to make it easy. And you get this once week, and it's just easy. You know it's there. You can pick it up. You can listen to it. And the next week, you get the next part of the show. So it's like TV. We want people to be able to treat this, you know, the same way they treat TV, so that they can follow along with it. They can it's just find it easier to fit into your day.
Yeah, that's definitely alluring to me, because as a reviewer for Hypeable, I get probably 3 to 4 books every other day in the mail. And as Kristen can attest, we're roommates, my books are all over the living room right now. I swear I'm going to pick them up soon. But it's so intimidating, because I'll get this book out and I'm like, oh, this sounds so good. But it's like 400 pages long, and I'm a fairly slow or average reader. It'll take me a week or so to read that. And when I have, you know, 4 or 5 books that are due out that week or whatever, it gets very intimidating and I end up not reading any of them. So the idea that I can kind of pop in and actually complete an entire episode and feel like I've finished something, that is definitely something that I'm very interested in.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what we wanted to do. You know, I mean, you could binge them, but and people do, but I think the key really was to give you control of the reading experience and make you feel like you don't, that's not overwhelming, because it comes a bit of a time. And, you know, I also think that there's different things, there's a different experience, you know, when I watch a movie or when I binge watch a series on TV, I think that's a very different experience from getting that sort of serial experience where you live with the characters for a while, you know, where, you know, I think there's a huge difference between, you know, something happens on page 50 and then it pays off on page 250 and you're just reading this fast and so you finish it over the course of a week, and, you know, something happens in June and then 8 weeks later when you've been living with the story, it pays off. I feel like that there's, you know, something really interesting there, and I think it gives you more space to live with the characters over time.
And the idea that you can choose whether to binge or to read it slowly is also really great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's always been something I've liked about TV, is that with a movie, you meet a character, you're with that character, it ends, and it's done. Whereas with TV, you're like growing and learning with that character and getting to see more of them than you necessarily would in a film. So I definitely see what you're saying, like being able to spend a small amount of time with them every week gets you into the head of the character. Like you feel like you know them better rather than like in one big chunk and this is all you get and then we're moving on, you know, like that. I do understand what you mean. That's really cool.
Yeah. It's actually funny, you know, I know you guys want to talk about Book Burners, Book Burners is now in its third season, and now that we're getting to these later seasons in our serials, it's wonderful to see these things pay off. So you have, you know, elements, plot elements that we suggested in season one, you know, places we might want to go one day. And now, you know, when people really get the characters, they're slowly starting to come back and really, you know, you're starting to get that great effect you have in TV where, you know, you've been with these people for a while and now, you know, oh yeah, that mystery, I always wondered what the world was about. You know, it's all coming back and paying off and it feels really good, honestly.
And I've heard that this comparison to television isn't just in the material and how that is structured, but it's also behind the scenes, because you guys actually have writer's rooms for the staff of writers you have working on each serial.
Yes, that's right. We wanted to take what we thought worked really well in television. And so we sort of have that TV showrunner writer's room model. So we have, there is a lead writer on each series. It's typically the person who's created that series. And they're in charge of maintaining, you know, a core creative vision for each serial. But we also use a writer's room. And essentially the writers alternate on writing episodes. And they also, so right at the beginning of a project, we'll get all the writers together and they'll spin off all ideas and they'll talk about it and they'll really break down the whole season. And then they'll start getting to write it. And, you know, one of the interesting things we've found, there's I think three interesting things. First, we were a little worried about getting a bunch of writers in a room. You know, writing is normally a solitary pursuit. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't know how it was going to go at the beginning. And what's turned out is that the writers we've worked with have loved it. You know, we actually had, on one of our serials, we had a writer who wasn't going to be able to write on the serial. Her timing just didn't work out, but she said, can I just come to the story summit to help plan it out? Because it's so much fun and so interesting. And they, you know, I think writers, because it's such a solitary pursuit, they don't get a lot of opportunity as part of their work to, you know, bounce ideas off other people and talk about things and have this sort of social aspect to it. And I think the bouncing off of ideas, the second point, is creates really good ideas that none of them would have ever come up with on their own, and it makes them happen a little faster. One of our writers was telling me the other day that, you know, we can write a serial in about 6 months because of the writer's room. And one of the writers said, I can't believe how quickly we go through the process just in figuring out what works and what doesn't. You know, typically it takes me, you know, a few months to figure out something isn't working because, you know, I'm writing it and then I get later into the book and I realize, oh no, that didn't work. And then I have to go back and fix it. But with a writer's room, you have all these, you know, brilliant people talking, and the good ideas really bubble up to the surface and the bad ideas sort of sink. And just having the different minds there to talk about it really helps, you know, come up with these great things.
And yeah, and speaking of that, again, the whole TV concept, obviously adaptations of books into film and TV is huge right now. Is this something that you guys are also looking into for your stories?
I would be lying if I said that we, you know, created this thing which has the pacing of TV and feels like TV, and we didn't, you know, hope that this would make it easy for adaptation TV, and we didn't want to see adaptation TV. So we are in fact, it is something we think about. It's something we're in talks with various studios about. Nothing I can go into more detail about right now, but yeah, I think it's definitely part of the thing. I think a lot of books are harder to adapt to television, or even movies, because they're a little too long for a movie, but the pacing isn't quite right for television.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that one of the big advantages Sierrabox has is that, you know, they're built to work in that sort of pacing and format, and they're also built to be enjoyed in seasons. So, you know, there's a new season every year, just like TV for serials. And I think, you know, there's a lot of situations in books where book adaptations to TV where, you know, you finish the first adaptation and then you're done with the book. And then where do you go from there? And that's not an issue that we have, just because seasonality is sort of built into the model.
Right. And I love the idea that everything on Sierrabox kind of lends itself to this multi-platform media experience. And you kind of touched on this before, and I know Kristen's going to be really interested in this, but you said that everything on Sierrabox also comes with an audio version of the story. And just what is that like, setting that up? How does that work exactly? Because it's my understanding that you can basically start reading it, you know, wherever, and then you get to page 20 and you can switch over in your car and listen to the audio version. And by the time you get to your desk at work, you can go back to the physical version or the digital version and pick up on page 40. And it's very kind of seamless to do that.
Yeah, we wanted, again, you know, one of the principles of Sierrabox is fiction that fits your life. And this meant not just reading it, but audio as well. Because, you know, when you're in the car, when you're at the gym working out, when, you know, we actually had a new mom write us and say, it's the perfect thing to do when I'm nursing, because, you know, I don't want to have the TV on, but I can't read a book because my hands are a little full. We really wanted this to be something you could access everywhere and anytime. And so you're absolutely right. Every time you buy an episode of Sierrabox, serials, they come with the audio and the text. And similarly, as you're reading it, you can switch effortlessly from, you know, one to the other, and we'll keep your place and keep going. And it's been fun because it's meant that we've gotten to work with some great voice talent. You know, once the writers are done with each episode, you know, it goes over to audio record, and you know, we get to really think about both of them at the same time as part of the process, and I think that makes it stronger overall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as someone who listens to a lot of audiobooks and also owns the ebook copy, having to jump from like using Overdrive or the Audible app and then having to go to the book and search through and find the spot, and then I can read for an hour, and then the next day kind of having to skip forward in the audiobook to find where I left off, it gets really annoying fast. So I love that it's all kind of cohesive, and you can, you know, when sitting down with a book is what you're looking for, you can sit down and read it. And then if you don't have time and are jumping in the car, you can flip over to the audio and it'll pick up where you left off. That is like that's awesome.
Well, we know that we have people write and say, you know, we love this because, you know, I listen to it in my car on the way to work, and then on my lunch break, I just pull it out and I start reading it. And then I listen to the end when I'm driving home. And I think it's, exactly. You know, we wanted it to be seamless. We wanted it to be painless. And we think that audio is just as important as the text. And in fact, you know, we have about a third of our readers only read the text, and about a third only listen to the audio, but then we have another third who do both, and which is exactly, you know, what we had planned.
And I love that it just automatically comes together, because on Amazon you can buy the ebook for, you know, $5, and then sometimes the audio version is another $5, and it's just, not that that's necessarily bad prices or anything, but when you're buying a lot of books, when you go through a lot of books like Kristen does, that really adds up. And the idea that you have to buy the same book twice can get kind of frustrating. So I like that it's just automatically there. You don't even have to think about it. And if for some reason, if you're normally a reader 99% of the time, but the 1% you want the audiobook for some reason, it's already there, which is great.
Yeah, we didn't want to put people in that situation where, you know, I've had that same situation where I bought the book and then for whatever reason, I'm now going on a road trip or something and I really want the ebook, but I picked the book version, so now I have to spend again or vice versa. So, you know, I bought the audiobook and then I want the ebook and, you know, I have to pay the same amount again. So we wanted it to, you know, be, you know, you don't, we'll give you both, you know, you buy it from us, you get both.
Mm-hmm. The last big topic of discussion I wanted to talk about with Cereal Box in general was diversity, because this has been very apparent to me just kind of getting a surface overview of what you guys have going on here, and especially with Geek Actually, because we were able to read the first couple episodes of that as well, and it's very apparent from the beginning that that book is incredibly diverse, and I've kind of noticed this throughout the other serials that I've kind of gotten familiar with as well. So, you know, how important is diversity to you guys, both on the pages and in your writers' rooms, and what do you do to make sure that that's always a priority?
Diversity is important because I think we live in a diverse world. I think the way we get to get the best stories is to have a lot of viewpoints. And you hear a lot. One thing I think that we do better than TV, you hear a lot about TV show writers' rooms, which are basically, you know, 13 guys and one woman. And I think, you know, if you're writing stories in which, you know, some of your characters are women, it's probably good to be able to have that perspective in the room. Similarly, if you're writing stories with, you know, the Asian American experience or the African American experience or anything like that. You know, I'm not saying that it's impossible for someone, you know, to with research and respect do a good job, but I think that given that we have these writers' rooms, we can make sure that, you know, those perspectives are in the room. And I think once you're aware of that, once you're trying to make sure you get different perspectives in the room, that comes out on the page very naturally. So, you know, we've never gone into a serial saying to the writers, we want to make sure, you know, here's your quota for diversity. You know, I don't think that makes very good fiction. But we have had, stories which were planned in a certain way or had a certain setting or had certain characters. And we try to make sure that there's representation in the room. We always make sure that the rooms are at least 50-50 splits, men and women. We try to get minority voices just to make sure those perspectives are heard. And I think that translates to more diversity in the stories. And I think that's important. I think that's important because, again, like I said, we live in a diverse world. There's lots of people, so it's not just one perspective. And, you know, stories from just one point of view with one perspective would get really boring really quick.
Definitely. And I hope that is a trend that we continue to see throughout novels and television and movies. And I think that as people become more aware of how unbalanced it is still, those voices are going to be heard. And I love that Cereal Box is trying so hard to make sure that they are continuously trying to put those voices out there. So that's very exciting. And that kind of jumps us into some of the releases that I wanted to talk about. Bookburners season 3 is about halfway through right now. And I want to save that discussion for kind of our last topic, because that one is a pretty big one for you guys. But there's a couple other ones that are either upcoming or kind of in the works right now. And I know I'm probably going to mess this up. Is it Tremontaine?
Tremontaine.
Tremontaine. Season 3 will be released on October 11th. So what can you tell us about what's going on with that one? Because the little bit that I've read about it, actually pretty interesting.
Tremontaine is fantastic. It's actually the prequel to a cult classic fantasy novel called Swords Point by Ellen Kushner. And Ellen is the lead writer there. And so it takes place about 15 years before the events of that book. And it's a fantasy world, very little magic. It feels a lot like The Three Musketeers. And it's set in this city, and it's about Diane, the Duchess of Tremontaine, who is a sort of major supporting character in Swords Point. And it's the story of how she came to power. So I like to tell people it's sort of Three Musketeers meets House of Cards. And, you know, it's a very courtly world where, you know, dueling is a very big part of that. And it's a very sexy series. You know, Swords Point came out in the 80s, and it was one of the first fantasy novels to feature gay main characters. And what's amazing about that is that they were, you know, they were just gay. You know, that was who they were. That was part of their lives. And it didn't make a big deal about it. And I remember reading it as a kid, and this is the first time I saw, you know, gay characters in a book, and I thought, this is kind of amazing. You know, it very much, you know, I think it worked because it wasn't, you know, a very special, you know, issues sort of novel, and we maintained that spirit in the series. The cast is very diverse. I think there was an auto straddle review which came out of the first season, which said this is basically the gayest thing ever, and I love it.
I love that.
And you know, so and, but what's great about it is that we're continuing that sort of it's got that feeling of, you know, of like the Three Musketeers of 16th century France, of who's sleeping with who and everyone's sleeping with everyone, and you know, and sexuality is, you know, there's a lot of representation of different sexualities there, and it's fun. It's sexy. It's fun. The characters are great. If you want that sort of, if you loved that sort of, you know, books about dueling and relationships and politics and scheming, I definitely recommend Tremontaine. And it gets more, you know, it's really one of those things which I feel like the serial format has worked really well, because it lets us really delve into the characters and slowly develop their plots in a way that I think would be a little more difficult if this was a traditional novel.
Mm-hmm. And another cool one that I've heard about is Remade. And Remade Season 2 is going to drop on November 15th, which just happens to be my birthday, by the way. And what can you tell us about this one?
So Remade is great. It's a lot like Lost. It's the story of a bunch of teenagers who have... last thing they remember is dying or coming close to death. And then they wake up in this post-apocalyptic world, and they're not sure why they're there. And each episode, you know, is told from the perspective of a different one of the teens. And like Lost, it's sort of melded with flashbacks to their life at the same time as you're going forward with the sort of discovery and survival story of, you know, why are they here and how can and the daily struggle to survive, because they start getting, you know, chased by killer robots, you know, like you do, and it's And, you know, there's this big mystery, which, you know, we're slowly uncovering more of season two. You get a lot more answers.
Yeah. So if that sounds interesting to you guys, we do have the audio for the trailer for the Remade podcast right here. So enjoy.
The lives of 23 teenagers are forever changed. And it's not just because they all happen to die within the same minute.
They hit the truck head on.
She took out her phone and called 911.
He rushed back out of the cave, naked, into another hail of gunfire.
Breathe! And then there was a sense of falling. And it lasted forever.
Awakened in a post-apocalyptic world, they're searching for answers amidst the ruins of civilization.
A city?
Water was dripping somewhere nearby.
She didn't know how far away it was.
Though he didn't know how he'd gotten
Maybe.
There.
Maybe. She had given up hope a few hours too soon.
They don't know where they are.
An Earth where all the people were gone.
They don't know when they are.
He feared that he hadn't been dreaming at all.
But they know they're being hunted.
It dangled him there in front of its many
eyes. Three girls froze.
This wasn't a murder, it was a dissection.
Brought to you by Cereal Box is Remade. You live, you love, you die. Now run. With an award-winning team of authors including Matthew Cody, Kirsten White, Eugene Myers, Andrea Phillips, Carrie Harris, and Gwenda Bond. Premiering wherever you listen to podcasts on October 2nd. Listen early at TuneIn. Or check out the whole series at cerealbox.com/remadepodcast.
And I had a question about this too, because I wanted to know, you guys are calling this a podcast for season one, and I wanted to know what the difference is between that and just kind of an audio version. Why did you guys decide to call it a podcast, and what makes this different and unique?
Oh, so we wanted, with season two coming up, we wanted to try to introduce as many people as we could to the series. So we decided to release the audio that we already had as a podcast. For those people who have already, you know, bought Remade and listened to it, we've added some great sound mixing to give it more of a cinematic feel. And we're releasing the episodes, you know, via podcast, so, you know, for free for season one. And we're going to run them down for a limited time just so people can really get caught up and go right into season two when it comes out in November.
Yeah, very cool. So the trailer is going to drop on Monday, September 18th, and the episodes will begin to go live on TuneIn on September 25th and then everywhere else that you can get podcasts a week later. Season one of the podcast will finish on November 15th, right in time for season two to come out. I'm assuming the digital version of that with the normal audio.
Yeah.
So upcoming releases for 2018, what do you guys have on the horizon that you can tease people about?
Let's see. We have a thriller called False Idols that'll be out in January. And that is about an FBI agent who has to go undercover in the world of relic running and stolen arts and antiquities and just stop the flow of funds to a big terrorist plot. Later in the spring, we'll be releasing Born to the Blade, which is our first epic fantasy serial, which follows these diplomat duelists who represent their countries in duels that determine the political stakes in a world which is on the brink of war. I'm looking forward to that as a fantasy reader. Later in the year, we'll be doing some, you know, more fantasies, more science fiction, we'll be dropping a couple of mysteries. A little hush-hush now, but I think we're going to be putting out a ton of content in 2018, including a couple of very special projects that I'm excited about. But But I think early next year, it'll be False Idols and we'll be Born to the Blade.
Cool. False Idols seems like right up my alley, to be honest. So I'll be on the lookout for that one.
Excellent.
What about some pipe dreams? What kind of things would you love to see on Cereal Box in the future?
Oh my gosh. Oh, there's so much I'd love to see. I think, we can go with a big pipe dream. I think one thing, did you guys ever watch Veronica Mars? It was a little TV
yes.
show.
Yes.
I loved Veronica Mars.
Yes.
And, you know, I watched the movie a few years back and, mm-hmm. you know, I would love to see, you know, a Veronica Mars serial. Like if I could wave a magic wand, I would love to see, you know, serial continuations of great TV shows. You know, Veronica Mars, maybe Firefly, you know, I mean, stuff that people have loved and have gone off the air because, you know, it's expensive to make a television show and just continue here in the series on Cereal Box. I'd love to see that.
That is so interesting to me because I feel like, especially today, and obviously you guys at Cereal Box know this already, you're already practicing it, but so many people, so many creators are looking to other platforms to continue those stories. I mean, you have like Buffy and Charmed who have continued the stories on in comics, and Veronica Mars, great example, kind of did the movie thing years later and has a couple of books out. Teen Wolf is ending this year, and they've decided that they're thinking pretty seriously about continuing the story in podcast form. And I love the idea that Cereal Box could potentially become a platform where these creators go when one medium has decided, like, okay, we're kind of done telling this story on television, but that doesn't mean the story's over. Let's go somewhere else and try to tell this story in another way that fans will be able to consume. And the idea that Cereal Box could potentially be that platform is really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be really neat. And I think, you know, the way we write stories and the way we pace out our stories makes it a more natural fit maybe than, you know, a novel. I enjoyed the Veronica Mars novels. I'm not ashamed to say I read them. Mm-hmm. But I think that they didn't feel like a TV show. They felt like novels set in the world of a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that one thing Cereal Box could do is keep that feel. And then what else? I mean, I guess I'm mostly a fantasy reader. I would love to see, you know, I don't know. I'd love to be able to bring you a Neil Gaiman author fantasy serial. I'd love to see, you know, either fantasy or science fiction procedural. I don't think we've seen either of those on television, and I think those would be fun, you know, sort of a fantasy leverage or sci-fi castle. I don't know. I don't know. I'd love that. I'd love to see, you know, a lot more as we become bigger. I'd love to see, you know, get. I'd love to work with just authors who I've admired mm-hmm. for so long. I mean, that would just be a wonderful experience. And I think that would, you know, create some fantastic serials. There's some comic book writers I think who are fantastic writers and, you know, already understand the serial format. I'd love to work with them as well. Yeah, I guess that's it. I mean, that, you know, that's just me. You know, if I could wave a wand and have it, that would be
good. Sounds pretty good to me. I mean, best of luck to you because I would read all of those things. That sounds amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so to kind of wrap all of this up, I did want to touch on Book Burners, which is a pretty big series for you guys. And so kind of what we were talking about before, just kind of give us the pitch for this.
Book Burners is a story of a special team that works for the Vatican and travels around the world collecting dangerous, magical books and artifacts and fighting monsters and getting people out of trouble that come out of those books and artifacts. And they take them and they store them in the Vatican's black archive of banned books. And it's an actual thing, though presumably less filled with magic books in real life. And it's got that feel of a Buffy the Vampire Slayer or a Supernatural, where you know you have a different monster every week, and you have this team who has to deal with it. At the same time, you know, there's a sort of X-File-ish vibe of what's going on in the organization behind them, which has a very hardline view on magic, whereas these characters have to deal with the people who are sort of caught in between. And the third season, as I said earlier, the third season is especially exciting because it's where a lot of the plot threads we launched in the first two seasons are coming back to roost. We have characters' backstories, which form the spine of the series, and we explain a lot more about what's actually going on. In the last, has been seeping into the world at a faster rate, and in season three, we finally start to learn about why this might be happening, and the stakes get bigger, and the monsters get badder, and through it all you have these characters who hopefully you've come to really know and love in the first two seasons. It was our first book burn. This was our first serial, and as a result, I'm very fond of it. I think I think it's a fantastic. It feels like watching an episode of of Supernatural or of Buffy or of the X-Files. It's got that great caseiness to it.
And what does the writer's room look like for Book Burners?
Book Burners is, it was created by Max Gladstone. And the writer's room is Brian Francis Slattery, Andrea Phillips, Margaret Dunlap, and Mer Lafferty. And most of them are, I think most of them are actually literally award-winning science fiction and fantasy writers. Margaret is actually has more of a background from TV, and they just bring they're a great group. We actually just wrapped last weekend the story summit for the fourth season, so I got to see all of them, and I'm very excited about that as well. Yeah, everyone else will last. Have to wait for them to write it to find out what happens, but they're a great team.
And since this was your first one, what was it like kind of getting that group together for the first time, and what kind of obstacles did you guys run into and then inevitably overcome?
Oh, I think the biggest obstacle was that no one had done this before. Mm-hmm. So we didn't know what it was going to look like. The team actually changed quite a bit as we were recruiting people. Some people had to drop out at the last minute. Some people joined. I will say, thank God Margaret joined the team, because she'd actually been in a handful of TV writers' room. When I was putting this together, I'd done a lot of research and I talked to people who'd been in rooms, but obviously I'd never been in a room myself. So she was able to, when we were trying to set it up, she was able to, say, well, we do it this way, and everything worked very well. And that was very helpful. There was a lot of just making it up as we went along, learning what worked and what didn't work. I think when we first started it there, it was amazing. We concentrated on the wrong things at the beginning and then realized, oh, we have so much detail about this, but not enough detail about that. The one thing we did get right was, I really do believe that in a real way, serial fiction is about character. I think people say this, TV, movies are about plot, TV is about character. So what we did write was that we really got a strong handle on the characters as when we created them. And so this meant we always had something to come back with whenever we realized, you know, we hadn't talked about this thing enough. And at the beginning, we always were able to fall back on these really strong, really, really strong characters.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, what I've read of it so far has been fantastic, and I'm definitely interested in continuing to read. That basically wraps up our discussion of Cereal Box and everything that you guys have coming up. Really interesting stuff. I love learning the behind-the-scenes stuff about this, and I think our listeners will too. Is there anything, any final thoughts you have, anything you'd like to say before we go?
Well, I mean, I hope your listeners check us out. I really enjoy talking to you guys. It's not often, you know, people say, hey, you know, tell us about what you're doing. So that's always fun to be able to just, you know, tell you about myself. But no, I mean, thank you very much for giving us the opportunity. Thanks for checking it out. I think, it's a new form of storytelling. And so we, you know, right now we just want to make sure we can bring it to a big audience. And we hope people enjoy. I hope people check out Book Burners. I hope people check out the Remade podcast and listen to it and check out Cereal Box and see what we've got.
Yeah, and if you guys are interested, you can just go to cerealbox.com. That's S-E-R-I-A-L, not the other kind of cereal. And you can subscribe to a cereal. And it says right here on the website that you'll get discounted rate that includes both the text and audio versions as a subscriber to a cereal. You'll never miss an episode. When the new episodes are released, they'll automatically be added to all of your devices, which is very good because I'm forgetful. So if they're already there, then boom, I don't have to do anything. And you can pay as you go. They charge when a new episode comes out, and you can cancel your subscription anytime. It's free to make an account on Cereal Box, and you can read all the pilots, and it's very cool. So hopefully you guys check that out. And if you do, please let us know at Book Hype on Twitter what cereals you're into, and maybe we can get some more people interested in this because it is a very cool concept, and I hope it kind of changes things for this industry, and I hope people not only read more cereals but get more interested in consuming this sort of stuff on different platforms like the podcast and the audio versions. And you never know, maybe we'll see Book Burners on our TV someday.
That would be great.
And thank you, listeners, once again for tuning in. And we will talk to you again next week. Bye.
Bye.
I'm totally going to check out the Stephanie Perkins. Well, actually, now I don't want to because I really, I love Stephanie Perkins, but I really am worried that if I read this book, I will never sleep again.
It's, so, I mean, it's not as scary as it could be, but it's definitely pretty creepy. And I was like, oh man, if I come home and like Kristen's moved something and I'm like, wait, I'm going to be really worried about it. So blanket rule for the house.
Right?
Just leave things where they are.
Nothing is allowed to move ever. It has to stay exactly where you left it.